Welcome to Plastic Model Mojo, a podcast dedicated to scale modeling, as well as the news and events around the hobby. Let's join Mike and Kentucky Dave as they strive to be informative, entertaining, and help you keep your modeling mojo alive.
Dave, episode 86 feels like we were just here.
Well, we were just here on the outline that you had last time.
I know, man. That no power put me behind.
Yeah, I know. That was a pain in the butt. I'd still be moaning and complaining about it were the fact that I was out for one day and you were out for five.
Well, I guess that's what's made the recording seem so compacted. We seem like we just did this, man. I guess we kind of did.
We kind of just did.
Well, we're back now in the regular throw of things, and it's episode 86. Dave, yep. What's up in your model sphere?
Well, my model sphere is half exhaustion, half excitement. By the time most people are listening to this, you and I will be driving like bat out of hell from Kentucky, headed to Canada. And
that's right.
I can't wait. I'm stoked. I really, not having been up to Canada for a model show in forever, and I mean forever, 20 plus years, I cannot wait to do this. It's kind of a mini version of the Nationals buzz. So I'm really hyped up for it. Meanwhile, I'm also a little bit exhausted. I'm trying to get that P51 finished up so that I can actually enter it at Hamilton, take a little sting out of the fact that my photographs that were submitted for the Moosaroo were not complete. So I'm hoping to be able to plop this bad boy down on the table. We'll see how that goes. How's your model sphere?
A lot of the same, except for the exhaustion part, other than dealing with the time change of last week.
Hopefully they get rid of that stuff, man.
I hope so. But like you, we are headed up to Heritage Con in Hamilton, Ontario, Saturday morning, dark and early.
Yep.
We got our headquarters lined up, thanks to Chris Wallace, Mr. Model Airplane Maker. And Evan's coming down. Bruce is coming down. All these folks we know from the Ottawa area are coming down to Southern Ottawa, I guess that would be.
Yep.
And coming to Heritage Con, and we got some big plans. So, you know, I've heard from Terry Measley from Scale Model Podcast and Stuart Clark. You saw the message from Terry, and we're going
to
hook up with them after we get into town. That will be late afternoon, we hope, barring no unforeseen circumstances.
Yeah, if you're listening to this episode on Saturday, go to the Plastic Model Dojo. Because while we're traveling, I'm sure Mike and I are going to post a couple of on-the-road videos while we're headed to the Great White North. So go check it out.
I think so. Yeah, we'll probably be doing that. And just keep an eye out. Keep your phone close or tune in if you're on your laptop or desktop and see what we got going on. But I think we're going to do a Q&A, podcast Q&A, because we're going to have, the SMP crew will be there because it's our home turf. You and I will be there. So that's 100%. 100% attendance from Plastic Model Mojo. And D-Ran from the Model Geeks is going to be up there on a little vacation, front end of his vacation. So he's going to be there as well. So pretty fairly well represented, considering it's a one-day show and a lot farther north than a lot of us would normally go.
Yeah, well, we're crossing an international border for this thing. So, you know, that's a big deal.
Well, that's my model sphere, Dave. Getting ready. We swapped some lists of crap we need to take, and
yes,
I think we're pretty good shape now. I'm going to start getting that together.
Yep, you and me both.
Got a little laundry to do. That'll be all
right. Yeah, well, I had to fold. Hopefully, there's a dryer at the place we're staying because we've got the table runner. We'll need to throw it in the dryer and get the wrinkles out.
Oh man, I'm not sure we'll need it. I don't know. We have a table, Dave.
I hope we forgot a table.
Well, maybe they're listening and can facilitate that. I didn't.
I think they said they had one for us. Honestly, I do think so. But
well, if they do, that's great. If they can and don't, and if they don't and they can, that's even better.
Yes.
And if they don't, well, you know,
we'll walk around.
We'll walk around and enjoy the show.
That's right.
That's the model sphere, man.
I assume you have a model fluid in front of you.
Oh, it's like a three-peat, Dave. I'm still on the Russell's Reserve 10-year.
Oh,
man. I'm going to take some of that to Canada with us.
Yes. Yep.
I need to get a fresh bottle.
Absolutely.
Mine will still have some in it when I go, but I don't want to take like a half a bottle up there.
No.
We'll crack the seal on a new one.
There you go. I've never tried it. I've heard you talking about it. That's one I haven't tried, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, the wife and I are like 4-0 for recommending this and having it be a thumbs up. So it's not like all these people are crazy.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Not as much as the Weller, but I am looking forward to it.
Well,
so
it's not Weller, but
well, no. Nothing is other than Weller.
And you, what do you got going on? I hear something rattling. Maybe it's a rattler.
My lovely bride went out and bought me 6 more beers to use as modeling fluid for the next 6 episodes. This one is Mad Tree Brewing out of Cincinnati.
Hmm.
The name of it is Psychopathy, although they say it's supposed to be Psychopathy. It's an India Pale Ale, 6.9% ABV. It's hop forward, but not obnoxiously so. It does have the bitter taste on the back of the throat at the end of the swallow, but no, that's pretty good. I think that's going to get me through the episode. We'll see how it is, but when we get to the end.
Well, Dave, the listener mailbag is kicking as usual.
Good. Glad to hear it.
We should get into that.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, first up is Eric Simmelmeyer. And if you remember, he was the one asking last episode about the clear parts and the canopy, et cetera.
Yep.
Well, I guess it's still on that theme of that B-17 he's working on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's building this. He's not real pleased with it because it's mostly due to the windows. But
yeah.
There's another issue that's come up that he'd like our input on. It's a good question. He says maybe for the wheel, and maybe we'll put it on the wheel too and talk about it more with whoever's in the third chair when we actually do that. What techniques or practices are best to protect fragile parts on a model as you build? As you know, there are a bunch of machine guns sticking out of the B-17 that you must install before closing the fuselage. His current B-17 has about half of these broken off now. Now he normally leaves the pitot tube off and stuff like that.
Right.
But, you know, this is, in any scale, a 48 scale bomber is, fraught with negative modeling opportunities for this very reason.
Yep.
My engineering mind would be to see if you could possibly figure out a way to save those turrets still. Figure out a way to redo the part fit to not make them have to go in after the fuselage is married together.
Right.
Or maybe the gun barrels could go in last somehow.
Well, here's the solution I've seen that I think works the best. You cut the gun at the breech barrel meet. You glue the breech inside the model in the windows, because there are some that you literally can't do, you can't, they have to be done before you seal the model up. It's not like the waist guns in an open position where you might be able to fiddle them in there after everything's done. But the ones in the nose particularly and the cheek guns end up having to go in. But if you cut the gun at the breech, you install the back half of the gun in the window on the inside. You then complete the model. Then you take the barrel and you add it on the outside after everything's done. You've got a natural hole there that the breech half of the gun is sticking into from the inside, or sticking out of from the inside. And then you just marry the gun barrel up to it at the end. And it looks like it's one complete structure.
Interesting idea.
The other thing is replace the barrels themselves with brass.
That's where I was going to go.
Because brass is much less fragile. And first of all, if you go with the aftermarket brass barrels, they look a whole lot better than plastic. It's just there is no question that the fidelity of detail is much, much better on these brass barrels. Also has the advantage of being way more durable. So those are my suggestions.
Which one's he building? The old Hasi B-17?
Or is it the Revell?
I can't remember, so I'll refrain. Where I was going with is on the dojo, somebody put out there that they were going to build that Allen Hobbies Martyr 2D.
I think that was a joke.
I don't think the build's a joke.
Oh my gosh.
And the peanut butter whiskey bottle wasn't full, so I don't think it's a joke. And it's not a joke. They told me it's not a joke. Anyway, this is like a tangent, but I'll bring it back, I promise.
Okay.
So with that kit, you know, the details like ish and marginal at best, right?
Right.
So there's this company called, what was it? K59, is that right? A resin company out of,
yeah.
It's a one man show, right? A real cottage thing out of, I think, Korea. I could be wrong, but it was in Asia somewhere. I think it was Korea. That made a new gun shield and barrel set for that Allen kit. The problem was, if you put that on top of the Allen kit, you had this fidelity of scale disparity between the gun and everything under it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I wonder if brass barrels, I wonder if the kit's even worth it, you know?
Again, depends on what the builder is going for. If you want to improve it in every way you can improve it, brass barrels might be the way, and it also does help solve your problem of breaking them off. If this is one that you are building, you know, it's part of your plan to get better just because you wanted to do one, because you have the kit, and you don't, you know, you want to invest the time in building it, but you don't want to invest the time in really going all out on it, then, you know, maybe you live with the plastic.
All right, well.
But you can't replace some of the barrels. That is one thing. If you're going to use the replacement barrels, you have to do them all of the way around or it really will stand out.
No, that's true. Well, what about other small parts? Anything else you would deviate from the instructions? I mean, pedo to all that.
Well,
like my E16 float plane.
Yeah.
Still has none of the gun barrels or the pedo tube on it.
Yep.
And they won't until the whole thing's painted.
Oh, absolutely. That anything that can be, anything that's small and delicate that can be added at the end.
Get in the way of masking and stuff.
Right. I do, but there's sometimes you don't. I don't remember if that kit of the B-17, you have the ability to drop the gear in afterward.
Oh, yeah. That's another bugger sometimes, right?
There are a number of aircraft kit, the TU-128 that I've got half built. That's one of these ones where you have to trap the landing gear in the landing gear bay. So you have to add it as you're building.
You don't have to.
Well, you kind of have to. I mean, the way to correct that would be, particularly on the TU-128, I think would be so much of a pain in the ass, it wouldn't be worth it. But
if you're a lawyer, you might have to.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm not an engineer. Fine. You and Ed can chuckle all you want. Yes, I'm not an engineer. But there are some times that you have to add the gear.
And you get a broken tailwheel.
Yeah, well, all I can tell you is you have to be cognizant of it. And handle it accordingly. And there's just sometimes there's no way around it. But yes, if there's any small part that you can conceivably leave off and add at the end after the thing is painted, decaled, and flat coated and weathered, do it then.
Just think it through.
Yes, think it through. The instructions are not always the best way to put a model together.
And if it's fiddly stuff like pitot tubes and gun barrels, that's kind of the obvious stuff.
Right.
There may be other stuff that if you kind of trim here, cut there, maybe you can get it in when they're telling you not to, etc. That's what I was joking with Dave about there, folks. Sometimes you can re-engineer on the fly.
Yep.
And it might save you a lot of grief later.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, Lee Edmonds is up next, and he's from Down Under, Dave.
Okay.
On the topic of finding kits in strange places, he and his wife were driving through the country of New South Wales, stopped for lunch at Coonabarabran. There, at the back of an odd and end shop, they found a newly released Heller 72nd scale de Havilland Dragon.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
And it was the only kit in the shop.
Hmm.
So he bought it. Still hadn't built it yet, but
that's a good kit. But yeah, well, why would a store have a single model kit?
I don't know. It's a secondhand shop. So
yeah.
Somebody ditched it and somebody bought it and put it in the shop to sell.
Probably.
I mentioned this only in the expectation of hearing you say Coonabarabran.
He's just messing with you, man. He's I think he made the whole story up just to mess with you.
He may have. So I tried. I hope that's decent. And I have the edit of post-processing.
There you go.
Willie Garcia. Now it's Willie Myhoff Garcia. He's the guy that's got like the Irish, German, Spanish, or Latin heritage. I can't remember. Anyway, he is building Ukrainian Sukhoi 27.
Yeah.
In the digital camo.
Good choice.
But he's wondering if he needs to be cutting tiny strips and squares of masking tape or buying a pre-cut mask, or what would we say you do? I know what Dave's going to say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Again, any shortcut that makes your modeling quicker, saves you time and effort. Yeah, buy the pre-cut masks. Trust me. It's just like you could do it yourself. Why would you? Again, I'm of the opinion that pre-cut masks, particularly pre-cut canopy masks, are the greatest thing to come to modeling in the last 15 years, maybe only eventually rivaled by 3D printing. So if there are pre-cut masks available, get the pre-cut masks.
I think that's where I'd go with that.
Yep.
I probably wouldn't build this, but that's me.
Oh, you should. It's a gorgeous airplane. I mean, gorgeous. Especially in those markings.
I don't disagree, Dave. Ken Beckler from the Polish Coast Watchers, Dave.
Yep.
He wants to send out some kudos to Bases by Bill.
Oh, absolutely.
So he is trying to case a Revell 72nd scale SR-71. And he gave him some dimensions. And not only did they take his dimensions, but they came back with suggestions to better suit the display. And of course, he got the discount because it came to them through us. And he just wants to say, man, it's awesome, man.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that, I mean, the guys at Bases by Bill, I know it sounds silly to say it, they're professionals. They really know what they're doing. They're display professionals. So you may have an idea for what you want to do. They'll do what you want them to do, but they'll also give you input and say, hey, if you do this or this, it might be cheaper, it might be better looking, it might make your model display better, or all of the above. So, you know, they're the kind of people you can just place an order with them if you're just placing an order. But if you're looking at custom work, I mean, that's where they shine.
Well, and to ice the cake, he says they later called up to follow up and make sure everything was good.
That's great.
Yeah, you don't hear that much.
No.
Well, he's been ruminating on the building more kits faster to get better, and his opinion would be both. Build some faster using simpler kits to work out, you know, different problems and solutions, and then apply those to your more involved builds that you don't want to build fast.
I think a high-low, what in the Air Force they called the high-low strategy with the F-15 and then the F-16s, I think a high-low strategy for modeling may well be the answer to that question.
Could be. So you need to have your little side builds going on.
Yep.
Oh, who's next, Dave? Up next, Tim Holland. Now, he's from Model Geeks Country. He's got his Green Shirt Modeler blog. And
it's a great blog.
I assume that's from his Navy service.
Yes.
He was listening to our bit about Well, back to the clear parts. And he's building a Hasi G8N Rita.
Yeah.
And it says the canopy parts don't fit at all. So you probably got one of those, don't you, Dave?
I have.
Or is this a 48 scale?
The Rita, it's 72nd scale.
Well, he does a lot of dry fitting and adding sheet styrene to the non-clear areas, you know, like bottom frames and stuff.
Yep.
Oh, man. Then if it just doesn't work, he'll glue it on solid and he'll fill the gaps and he sanded the crap out of this. I mean, all the sandpapers, toothpaste, twice, three times with toothpaste, and then with the Nova's plastic polish. Now, mind you, he's got a canopy now that doesn't have any framing on it. So maybe he needs to write back in and elaborate on how he's going to replace that. Maybe by decal strips or something like that.
I was going to say, I've seen guys do it with decal strips. I've seen guys do it with thin tape, like Tamiya tape or the Tamiya flexible tape. Although the flexible tape has a finish that I'm not sure would be as conducive to paint. But bare metal foil. Strips of bare metal foil. But yeah, there are sometimes if you have to build this kit and it's got a god awful canopy doesn't fit real well, especially that Rita kit, which is an old kit that's 70s or 80s old, or maybe even earlier, you sometimes have to sand the canopy and then polish it back. I think that's something that a lot of people are afraid to do. But with time and effort, you can always get a clear part back to clear. I mean, you can, if you have to sand it, you can always get it back to clear using enough of the different fine grits of sandpaper, followed by polishing, followed by all of that stuff.
Well, Tim, if you don't mind, follow up with your technique for replacing the framing on this thing, because right now it's just a solid clear mass over, I mean, you can see right through it. He sent a picture. You can see the seat belts and the bulkheads and the seats, but there's no framing on the cockpit or the nose fitting. So, hey, whatever it takes, I guess, but I'm really curious where you go from here. And that's my own curiosity. I'm sure others would be interested as well, because, you know, that's kind of the nuclear option, right?
Yes, absolutely. That is your last choice, right up there with replacing it with a vac form replacement.
Well, there must not be one.
Yeah, you know, I don't think there is.
Oh, man, that's a lot of work. But it's looking good, Tim. Fill us in. I'm curious where this goes from here. I just want to see what you do and how you do it. Anthony Harden. A couple of questions.
Okay.
One's really general and kind of high level. What paint are people switching to that use Testers paints? Now, I'm going to have to assume he means Model Master line.
I'm assuming that he means Model Master and what enamels. I think he's probably saying he wants another enamel.
He might prefer one, but he's not that general. He's not that specific. I don't know. I was never, well, yes, I did use enamels, but I didn't use many Model Master. Go for it, Dave. This one's you.
If you're comfortable with enamels, you don't want to learn something new, then there are a couple of lines out there. There's Color Coats, which is the enamel that I use. There are the Humbrol enamels are still out there. You have to look around for them. And they're not quite the same quality as the old Humbrols, which were some of the best enamel paints ever. But I'll be honest with you, if you're willing to stretch yourself a little bit, the AK Real Colors thinned with lacquer thinner spray beautifully, and they don't have all of the what I consider the drawbacks of traditional acrylics. And I mean, there's the line is a huge line, so there are lots of colors. If you thin them with the lacquer thinner, they spray beautifully. You can do pretty much anything to them that you can do to an enamel. If not more. I think they're a little bit more sensitive to surface prep. So, you know, if you've got oily hands and oily fingers like me, you know, when you've put your model together and you're ready to prime, go ahead and wipe the model down before you prime and paint. And I think that'll eliminate any of those type of problems. But I would recommend to you that if you're going to go away, if you're willing to go away from enamels, to look at the AK Real Colors paints.
And you know, even Tamiya's got an enamel line.
Yes, that's right. It's very hard to find here in the U.S.
Yeah. And oddly, it's in square bottles.
Yep.
I don't know if that's an homage or what. But
I don't know.
It's kind of funny. Well, Anthony, if that gets you an answer, that's great. If not,
Right back in,
give us a little more detail, and maybe we can put you onto something. Well, next is Steve Anderson from Matamida, Minnesota, and he's got some philosophical musings for us, Dave.
Oh, I always love modeling philosophy.
Number one, perfect is the enemy of good. Now, we've said this, and this is ultimately attributed to Voltaire. Somebody else said it.
Yep.
Winston Churchill, maybe?
I think Winston Churchill did use it, but yes, it is originally Voltaire.
And he says, I think this goes to support faster build style also fits with the engineering's view. What type of model is it from how far people will view it? Oh, that's from Ed, who's our guest tonight.
Yes. Yep.
That determines how good it has to be.
Yep.
Now, he goes on to say, Voltaire also said, life is a shipwreck, but we must not forget to sing in the lifeboats.
Now, that's a quote I'd never heard before.
It says, in his case, half his models are shipwrecks, but he won't stop singing it from the workbench. Faster will lead to more disasters as build speed increases and skills increase too. But that's okay when the mistakes are viewed as part of life to be sung through instead of avoided.
Well, I think that gets to a larger point. It's a hobby. You're supposed to enjoy it. And if you feel the pressure to make every model perfect, I'm not sure for the vast majority of modelers that leads to enjoyment. So, you know, the Japanese have this concept of beauty in the imperfections. And I think there's something to that.
Oh, I agree. And you know, that's the shattered pots where they fill the They fill the cracks with the gold.
Yep, that's exactly what, and I cannot remember the name of that. There is a specific, of course, in Japanese, just like German, there's a name for everything. And there is a name for that. I can't remember it, but that is exactly what I was talking about when I was mentioning that.
And he says, that said, he saw the pictures of my float plane catapult on Facebook. So this is a really recent email. So maybe slow and steady is the way to go. Well, it's a lot of times it is for me because there's a lot of subjects. I'm a slow builder. The subjects I pick are ones I'm pretty passionate about. So that's why I have this disconnect with this whole build faster and your skills will catch up, because I just haven't got my head around compromising the quality, potential quality of some of those subjects just to get faster.
Well, and again, I'm a kit assembler. You're a modeler. As far as you are trying to come as close to the prototype as you possibly can, no matter what it takes to get you there. Whereas I would like, in my case, a model of all these things, and I want to find the best kit of the thing and put it together and do the best job I can. But in general, I'm not going to buy 3 kits, 2 sets of plans, 6 references, and try and come up with the perfect model. That's not the way I do it.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm trying to come up with the perfect model. I think I'm just enjoy the immersion of the technical history of the thing. And I just don't get that if I just grab a kit and throw it together.
Yeah. Although I would point out with that Airfix 76 scale, that's pretty much what you did, and you enjoyed it.
I did. I'll take that. You're right.
So I think there's room for both.
There is. You know, I did create a special compartment in my philosophy for that kind of build. So, you know, I can wear 2 shoes. They don't have to match.
There you go.
And his third point is good enough for government work. Sometimes things have to be good enough simply because there aren't enough hours in the day.
Well, And that's a real good point. We've talked with Jim, and I don't know if we've actually talked about it on the podcast. We talk about it a lot off the air. But Jim's club meets at an airplane museum, and the club supports the museum provides the club a space, and in exchange, the club supports the museum by having a display case where they rotate stuff in and out, usually based on a theme, you know, women in aviation, minorities in aviation, firsts in aviation, et cetera, whatever the theme happens to be. And Jim feels like he has to contribute because, you know, it's part of the club's getting something from the museum and you want to give back and all. But the point is that these are models that are going to be in a case in a museum. Now, not featured as a single huge scale item, but just one of a collection of examples of whatever the particular subject is. They're not going to be viewed up close. That's one of those cases where good enough for government work works. It's not like the viewer can walk up to the model and slip a mirror, dental mirror under to examine the underside to make sure that that seam got completely filled or something like that. So I've urged Jim on those to try and keep in mind what he's building to.
Yeah.
Which is Ed's point before.
That's true. All right. And on the email side of things, Dave, our last one is, of course, from our good friend Michael Karnauka in New York City.
Oh, our question. We always end with Michael. I always love that.
Well, did we make him 002?
I don't know. We should.
Anyway, that aside, have you ever had a project you got so disgusted at, you tossed it in the trash and moved on? And did you try? Did you try it again at a later date?
Yes and yes. There is no shame in admitting failure. Either you botched it in some way from which it is unrecoverable, or it would take so much effort to recover it, it's just better to throw the kit away and go buy a new one. I've done that, and I would do it again if I encountered those circumstances again. And I don't feel a bit bad about doing it. How about you?
I'm sure I have. I'm trying to think. What's the most recent one I've just banned? Well, I had an entire lower hull, well, not entire. I had as many miles down the road of my first attempt at KV-85, and I was trying to fix the Eastern Express kit, and I'd done all the bottom side details. I'd moved a bunch of crap, and I'd cut out the intake areas for to put photo etch screens in there, and I put a lot of time into it. And what made me toss it and made me disgusted with it was all that time. And then Trumpeter came out with their KVs, now not their KV-85, mind you, just their KVs,
right?
And the hulls already had all that work done. They had a bottom side to tail. The screens were already open so you could use their photo etch parts. And it's like, oh man. And I just, and about that time I was struggling with some dimensional issues with that kit. And I was like, screw it. I'm just going to wait. I'm going to restart this project on a KV hull, or maybe somebody will do a better 85 at some point. Well, both things happened, really. So I've been that one, and now I'm working on a KV-85 again right now.
Yep.
So definitely. Well, Dave, that is all in the email basket. What's going on Facebook?
Over on Facebook, we've gotten a fair amount of input on the last episode or last couple episodes. Johnny Chung reached out, and he really enjoyed the Strange Brush episode on scribing, and he's actually working on a monogram 72nd scale space shuttle. And that kit is completely pretty much completely raised panel lines. and he is rescribing the whole darn thing. So, you know, he sent along a couple of pictures of it, and he's doing a really nice job. So, unlike me, he's not at all intimidated by having to rescribe large portions of a kit.
Is he the guy that's doing that on Facebook?
I think so.
Yeah, that's a wow.
It is. Mike Fuller reached out, same subject, episode 85, not 86, 85, on with Dr. Strangebrush. He chimed in to say how much he agreed with both myself and Dr. Miller about that Voitech, the UMM USA 001 Scriber, and how good it was and in rescribing models and rescribing erased panel lines. And in fact, listening to that episode prompted him to go over to Model Paint Solutions, order 002 and 003, the other scribers, and some of that clear 3mm scribing tape. So that you'll never be dissatisfied dealing with Dr. Miller. And I'm here to tell you, I own those other scribers and I use them all the time. So he's going to be happy about that. You know, you and I and Terry Measley talked about the upcoming show at Heritage Con in Hamilton, Ontario, and he's going to be there. And so we're going to try and meet up. And it was nice of him to reach out and try and set up a hookup so we can grab dinner and talk models, because there's pretty much nothing more fun than doing something like that. And then Chris Meddings reached out. Do you remember we were talking about all the publications in the UK for modeling, yes, as opposed to the paucity of publications in the US? He did mention that we wondered why AFV and Air Modeler were no longer Ming branded. Apparently, they stopped working with Ming some months ago. And he did say that not only are those two magazines available as electronic versions, which we wondered about when we were talking, he said you can actually order individual articles as PDFs. So
I knew that.
Instead of buying the whole magazine, which, again, if you can get an electronic version of that whole magazine, that's great. But if there's only one particular article, you can purchase that particular article.
All right.
Well, this is the part of the episode where I ask you, when you're done listening to this episode, please go to whatever podcast app you listen on, rate the podcast, please give it 5 stars. It helps us in visibility and to allow more listeners to discover the podcast. Also, if you've got a modeling friend, and I know everybody listening has at least one modeling friend who doesn't know what a podcast is, doesn't listen to podcasts, etc., please go to that person, give us a recommendation, help them out if they need help finding and learning how to listen to a podcast. A recommendation from a friend is the best way for us to continue to grow an audience, and we continue to grow, and we're amazed by it, and a big part of that is down to all of you all. So thank you.
And once you've done that, please check out the other podcasts out there in the model sphere. And you can do that by going to www.modelpodcast.com. That's modelpodcastplural.com. It's a consortium website set up with the help of Stuart Clark from the Scale Model Podcast up in Canada. If you go to that URL, you can find banner links to all the podcasts who are participating with us in this spirit of cross promotion. In addition to podcasts, we have a lot of folks out there, our blog and YouTube friends out in the model sphere. Chris Wallace, model airplane maker, a great model airplane blog. We've got Mr. Evan McCallum, Panzermeister 36, who's always doing a lot of great things for 35th scale model armor modeling and model railroading from time to time. We've got the Inch High guy, Jeff Groves, Inch High guy blog, all things 72nd scale. Did you see Jeff at
Yes, I saw him at Columbus. We had a great time. He's doing another one or two of his batch builds. He's doing, as a matter of fact, 109s, ME-109s. And so he's producing like a dozen at a time. I continue to be amazed by his work product and his work output. One of the reasons I look forward to model contests is I know at many of them I'll get to see Jeff and we'll get to spend, you know, 45 minutes or an hour sitting at a table and just talking. And, you know, that's the real joy of contests. It really is. And if you're not going to contests, you're not getting that benefit. And that is one of the big benefits, is visiting with friends.
And we also got we've also got Stephen Lee with Sprue Pie with Frets, and he's got a nice long and short form blog, and you can get on there and check out all his musings about the industry, the hobby, and everything in between. And finally, Jim Bates of Scale Canadian TV. We hoped we were going to see him at Heritage Con, but that's just not going to work out. Maybe at Nats.
Oh, he's coming to Nats.
And he needs to get a video up.
Yep, he does. We've been on him for that. He's taken a little break. Jim is a practicing attorney. He's a solo practicing attorney. And particularly given his subspecialty, the first of the year is always a very, very busy time for him. So I'm hoping we'll see something from him soon.
He's been hitting the podcast around like a pop star with a new album.
Yep.
Or a new book.
Now we need to get him to put out the album or the book. Finally, as always, if you are not a member of your national IPMS organization, IPMS USA, IPMS Canada, IPMS Australia, IPMS Israel, Norway, whatever, if you're not, would you please join? The national organizations do a lot to facilitate everything that goes on in the hobby in your country. And there's no national organization that's that expensive to join and support. Go ahead and do it.
Well, Dave, let's have a word from our sponsor.
You got it.
Plastic Model Mojo is now brought to you by Model Paint Solutions, your source for Harder Steenbeck airbrushes, David Union power tools, and laboratory-grade mixing, measuring, and storage tools for use with all your model paints, be they acrylic, enamels, or lacquers. Check them out at www.modelpaintsolutions.com.
Come and make it in Texas, Dave.
How far away are we?
Dave, we are 136 days away from the IPMS National Convention in San Marcos, Texas.
And Has registration gone live, Mike?
Well, we talked about that a couple episodes ago, Dave. Yes, registration's live. I hear you've registered. I have not.
Yes, I've gotten it registered. So has Jim Bates. So you need to get on the stick.
I guess I do. Well, we've got an update from Agent 003.
All right.
Mr. Brandon Jacobs. Agent 003 would like to make us aware of Riley's Tavern. If we're going to be at Nats and we need something to do, we're going to want to check that out, Dave. It is a true, in capital letters, Texas saloon.
All right.
An authentic Texas dive bar. Now, he says at first glance, the place might seem a little too authentic. But do not let that fool or scare you. The staff is friendly and so are the locals. It's a mix of locals and tourists. The bartenders told me tourists stop in there all the time. It's like an authentic Texas dive bar. Riley's is friendly and even family friendly during the day. Attendees should feel welcome. You know, Dave, I had a great idea.
Which is?
You remember back when we went to Amps in Havre de Grace, Maryland?
Oh, God, yes.
And that one particular trip where we went to a little place called the Eagle's Nest.
Yes.
And me being the junior member of the entourage was forced through the door of this establishment.
Yeah.
By the senior members of the entourage.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they were hoping that would prove it safe if I didn't get thrown back out. I think we need to go here and take Evan with us.
Oh, God. Throw him through the door
first. Evan through the door first.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. And hopefully Evan won't make the mistake you did at the Eagle's Nest.
Well, he won't have to worry about that because I won't make the mistake that led, that would lead him to make the mistake at the Eagle's Nest.
Good.
Well, Brandon says this place is unique. It's a historic landmark because J.C. Riley and his uncle drove to Austin on September 14th, 1933 to secure the first beer license issued in Texas after the repeal of Prohibition.
That is historic.
Right. Well, it gets better, man. Riley's Tavern is the proud holder of Texas beer license number 00000001. How about that?
That sounds like my kind of place. I can't wait to try it.
It's in Hunter, Texas, which he says is basically San Marcos and about 10 minutes by car from the hotel. So
good.
There we go.
I'm looking forward to visiting a number of those places during our morning and evening sojourns.
All right. Well, that's coming making Texas for this episode, Dave. Now it's time for the Benchtop Halftime Report, brought to us by Tackett Z. Tackett Z, the must-have tools for the model maker. Check out all Ed's activities at www.tackettz.com. A lot of 3D printed accessories for your workbench to make your life a little bit easier, hopefully, while you're building your models. Dave, I got a feeling I know what the answer is.
Partly you do, yes.
What is still on your bench?
What is still on my bench is the P-51 for the Moosaroo that I am finishing touches on. And as I joked with Mike, this model may actually be off gassing in the rental car on the way up. But I'm going to have it done for Heritage Con. But you know what, with that in sight, and then I've got the, you know, antenna to add to the Kate and the pitot tube, and the Kate's done, that will actually give me about 12 inches by 20 inches of clear work space on my bench. Now, the 144 scale B-52 is so close to being finished. I'm going to obviously put that back on and do that up. But it actually gives me a window where I'm going to have to start making some choices about what's next.
All right.
And you and I, you know, we got 9 hours to fill on the way up to Hamilton and 9 hours to fill on the way back. I suspect at least some of that discussion is going to revolve around what David does next.
We may even do that live.
Yes, that's right. That might well be on a Facebook Live. So if you're listening to this and it's Saturday, we're driving, go over to the dojo and look and see, because that may be up.
Make suggestions.
Yes, make suggestions. So what's on your bench, Mike?
Oh, man, Dave, I've had a mojo lifting.
Tell us about this.
A mojo lifting page turning event on my E16 and Catapult project.
Well, yeah, tell us about this, both what you did, and I know from speaking with you or texting with you and all over the last day or so, you've really gotten a charge, a buzz, a lift, a something. I want you to A, tell us what you did, B, tell us what you felt, and speculate as to why you think it had that effect.
Well, for folks who haven't been on the dojo and seen the pictures already, I actually got the Catapult rigged with the launch cable, and I got it buttoned up. I got the open side on it. So still a lot of weathering to do still, but this closed the chapter on my plan to make all that come together. And I'm just really pleased with the way it came out. Now, in retrospect, I give my build plan a B-, C+. It worked out, which is always good. And that's kind of why I'm kind of riding high about it, Dave, is because it ultimately did work out. Now,
even though you realize it wasn't the best way to do it in retrospect.
That's right. So, God, what'd Patton say? A good plan executed violently today is better than a perfect plan tomorrow something like that.
Yep.
The issue was, I built up So it's a truss, or it's a, you know, it's a box. It's got four sides. Right. So I left one side off so I could put the innards in it and rig it. Right.
Yeah.
Man, did that make it hard to paint and weather the inside of that thing. And it was weird because I had full access to one side because there's no side on it. One side of the interior, like the top and bottom.
Right.
Plates or parts. But on the other side, I had the side in the way.
Right.
And it just took a lot of work to even apply something as simple as a pin wash and some oil paint work. And I think the next one of these I build, and there'll probably be another one of these Fujimi catapults in my future. I'm going to leave it completely apart and paint and weather the inside faces of the boom before I even put it together.
Well, my vote is that you do one of the two Hasegawa kits with the Hasegawa catapult and see how it compares to the Fujimi catapult.
Oh, I got to learn all this all over again.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good idea or not. But, you know, that's why I give it a B-, C+. I realized, you know, once I started painting it, while it seemed good on paper, as they say, the reality proved to be a little bit more difficult than it should have been. But it came together. In the end, it all worked out. And to go through this a little bit, to rig the catapult, I finally, you know, after buying 8 miles of different kinds of string and cord and cable or whatever, I settled in on this nylon upholstery thread. Now, a silk thread also got recommended to me, and I, for some reasons, I kind of agreed that may have been a better choice because it's natural and the paint might have stuck to it better, etc.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was sick of buying stuff and chasing stuff, so I just kind of went with what I had because it looked like the nylon was going to respond well to the CA and paint washes anyway.
Yeah.
So it worked out. It worked out in the end. But the kit is not made to be rigged.
Right.
Now, the Hasse one you talk about is actually, there's a rigging diagram and instructions in that kit to rig that catapult. Not so much in the Fujimi kit. I mean, even so far as that it's like crappy 72nd scale landing gear, right? Nose gear, like the wheels molded against the strut. And
right.
So that's the way the pulleys were for the most part. The small pulleys in this Fujimi kit, they were
molded into the fork.
Yes, they're molded into the fork, and there's nowhere to pass a cable above it through the fork across the pulley.
Right.
So I had to drill all those out. And you got one of them, I even broke and had to rebuild with like sheet styrene and the kit part. Because once you drill that hole across the top of the pulley, it was so fragile that you were inviting problems.
Yeah.
Now, what I did was to rig this thing was I cut a very generous piece of cable, like 3 feet long. I was probably going to have more than a foot excess, but better to have too much than not have enough after you start gluing it to the pulleys, right?
Yeah, coming up short would suck.
So I cut the ends and I dipped them in like a thin CA.
Yeah.
To form an aglet. You know what an aglet is, Dave?
I know what an aglet is. Thank you.
Also erroneously known as a flugel binder.
Now, I've never heard that term.
Well, that's a reference, so we'll see who digs that one out.
Okay.
So the aglet on the end, the stiff section, once I dipped it in super glue and it hardened, I actually cut it again to get the most minimal cross section I could. Right. Because when you cut it unreinforced, it kind of frays. So all that went through the holes I drilled just perfectly. It really went a lot better than I thought it was going to go. It's just the painting. That's why I give it the B-, C+, because it just really made it so hard to paint.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
With that cable, you had to get it so that it looked like it was under tension.
Right.
But the system didn't actually support any tension, did it?
It could support a little bit. What I did was I super glued it to every pulley as I progressed from the firing mechanism.
So you kept it taut, but not really under tension.
Right. I just kept it taut. And the The hard part was where to fix the term where the two ends come together, because it's not like the real Caterpillar where it had some anchor point in it that was mechanical, right?
Right.
Which I have no idea where it was. So what I did was I got up to where it was going to be under the launch trolley. And then I kind of pulled those cables against each other and super glued them and then cut the ends off. And it, folks on Facebook can see it. It wasn't pretty, but it's all going to be hidden. So it really doesn't matter. So,
right. It all lays under the launch trolley.
It all lays under the launch trolley, and really pleased with the way that comes out. I'm going to proceed with the weathering going forward now, finish up the oil paint work, and then got to move on to the plane.
That's right, man. I can't wait for that.
Well, Dave, that's the Benchtop Halftime Report.
All right. Well, Mike, you know, kits continue to be announced. Things continue to come out. In fact, things seem to be accelerating due to all these new 3D items and 3D companies. So have you seen anything lately that's a fave or a yawn?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to double up on my first one. Even though they're from separate companies, they're vehicle families that are near and dear.
Okay.
So Ryfield has announced their second KV-1 kit, which is a cast turret version of, well, it's real similar to the one they already came out with, but I'm pleased to see that line going forward. In addition, there's been at least, well, there's two Sturm Geschütz coming from MiniArt. Well, Stug 3 and a Sturm Haubitze that are the final versions of those vehicles.
Right.
Which is, I think, the same vehicle that Ryfield came out with, but Ryfield did the Sturm Geschütz version. So we'll see where this goes. I'm liking those coming out. In addition to the Stugs from MiniArt, there's some FF8 Stugs coming from, I can't remember if it's TACOM, maybe.
Yeah, I think it is TACOM.
Which are, I think the Blitz kits.
Yeah.
Which our friend Evan wasn't too fond of, but it gives me hope that the way this is going with all these Chinese manufacturers is that if one of them does it, the other's got to do it eventually, right?
Right.
So what this opens up the door is finally somebody's done what I call the turtle top, the early Sturm Geschütz superstructure. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to all those. I'm probably going to pick up one of the MiniArt Stugs, and I'll. There's just no way I'm not buying the Ryfield KVs. What's your first one, man?
Well, I'm actually going to start with a yawn. And there's kind of a reason for this. Listeners, if you haven't seen it already, our friend Evan McCallum, Panzermeister36 on YouTube, has released the second installment of his 3D tracks video, where he reviews 5 or 6 or 8 more companies releasing 3D tracks, which has been kind of amusing for a number of reasons, not least of which is more companies are releasing tracks faster than Evan can review them. He thought this was going to be a two-parter. He's already admitting he's got a part 3, and I'm betting by the time he gets to part 3, it's going to be part 4. But the reason I mention all that is one of the companies he reviews is a company out of China called Chino Models. And they apparently they've released a track for every conceivable 35th scale model out there. But that's not what I'm talking about. Chino Model has recently announced a whole bunch of 35th scale dogs. And they are releasing not just generic dog or not just German Shepherd War Dog. They are releasing kits of specific breeds. Pomeranian, Schnauzer, Beagle, just the the list is that though when I looked on ScaleMates, they were listing like 12 different breeds of 35th scale dogs, where you get three or four 35th scale 3D printed dogs of a specific breed. And that's just crazy. That's just plain crazy. But, you know, I'm sure there's a fan of Pomeranians or Schnauzers or Beagles out there that's going to jump on that. But I just cannot see that being a high demand item. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're wrong. I don't know.
We'll see.
As dogs make their way into dioramas quite a bit. But
yes, they do. But do you ever really see specific something where the diorama requires a specific breed of dog?
I mean, it could, right? But
yeah, oh, it could. But especially now that you've got the choice.
I guess so, man.
So what's your next one?
Vespid models, 72nd scale armor, Dave.
Good choice. I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, that's just, they got an early Tiger One coming out.
Yes, they do.
Actually, so does Border Models.
Yes.
But anyway, I've got my eye on the Vespid kit.
Well, and I can tell you everything I hear about the Vespid kits is they are really, really nice. Steve Husted, I believe that Panther that he did.
Yes,
that
it
little
is.
72nd scale Panther was a Vespid kit, and he really highly praised it.
And I think Chris Sieber, Luftraum 72's Jag Panther is a Vespid kit as well.
I believe you are correct in that as well.
Well, speaking of Husted, this gets back into that 72nd scale diorama I threw by him, and he's goaded me a little bit, and this might be related to that.
Good. That's good.
We got another fave?
Well,
or do you have a fave at all?
Well, yeah, there's a fave, and not my favorite manufacturer, but I don't think anyone else does this, and I really would like to do this in 72nd scale. You know the Soviet long barrel 280 millimeter heavy mortar?
Yeah.
The one on the track chassis with the there's a very famous sequence of film of this thing in Berlin firing down streets. An Ace model.
Yep.
Which Ukrainian company. So Slava Ukrainia. They've announced that kit, and they actually announced it a month or so ago. And I got to say, I could see myself doing one of those.
I won't tell anybody, Dave.
Thank you. Hopefully my secret's safe.
I can keep going, man. I got another fave.
Go ahead. Fave, I've got another yawn.
And then I have a yawn too. But by okay. my final fave is from Arden Miniatures. They've got a series of figures. You can buy the whole set or individually. And it's an early Panzer crew, and they're like out of the vehicle. So that some of them are wearing long greatcoats, but they're all wearing the early berets with the crash helmets.
Yeah.
The reason this interests me, there's a couple of figures in there that are candidates for a project I'm considering. I think I may have mentioned it last episode, or we talked about it offline. You know, all this runs together, right? I mean, this is, for us, this is like real life anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
I've got a diorama I built, and I swear we talked about it. And I even dated it on the back. It's like 84 or 85 or something. That's the Tamiya SDKFZ 222 armored car with some figures and an Italeri park gate. I'm toying with the idea of rebuilding that diorama.
Really?
With the modern kit. I think TriStar made it. Hobby Boss is kitting it again. And some modern figures. And just redoing the exact same scene. Well, almost the exact same scene. Just doing it again is at my current level with current.
That would make an interesting contrast. You know,
because I was a teenager when I built that thing.
I would love to see that. That would be way cool. Well, put them side by side. And
so maybe I'll do that. It's a decent idea.
That is. I like that idea.
Well, what else you got, man?
I got one more yawn.
Well, I've got a yawn, but you go with yours first.
Meng has announced a M10 Wolverine egg tank. And I'm sorry. If there's anybody out there who lives and dies to build egg tanks and egg planes, I'm sorry. To each his own. I'm glad you're getting what you want. I just don't understand. I can understand why you want to build an M10. M10s are cool. But an M10 egg tank, hard pass. So what's your last yawn?
And it's a simple matter of my interest versus the subject matter. I'm sure this kit's gonna be fine. So this is not a slight against the kit or the purveyor of this kit. Das Verks has got a Lark 5.
What the heck is that?
It's a four-wheeled amphibious transport truck from the late, primarily Vietnam era, kind of around the, 60s. I don't know how far it goes back. I don't know a lot about it, but I don't know. It's not a very attractive vehicle.
But it's not so ugly that it's cool.
It's not so ugly, it's cool. So
it's in the uncanny valley.
That's right. The uncanny valley of, not for me.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's folks out there, there may be some cool Vietnam War photographs of this thing doing stuff. And it all makes sense to somebody, but that would not be me. So that's my yawn.
I hear you.
Well, Dave, that's all for faves and yawns. We need to hear from another one of our sponsors.
Yes, we do.
Getting the right sized base for your model, diorama, or vignette can be difficult and time consuming. Bases by Bill has the solution with their all new custom sized display bases. Offering sizes of 4 to 30 inches, you choose the dimensions you want and get the size you need every time. And they can laser engrave the base with a unit emblem or text, all to your specifications. Better still, shipping is included within the lower U.S. 48 states. Built by modelers for modelers, Bases by Bill has bases and display cases for any type of model and for any size. Visit their website at basesbybill.com to see their products or to get your own custom-built base or display case quote. Use the code MOJO at checkout to apply a 15% listener discount to your order. That code again is MOJO for 15% off. Bases by Bill for all your model display needs.
Well, Dave, our special segment tonight is from our favorite retired rocket scientist and bass thumping badass, Ed Barath. And we title it An Engineer and an Artist Walk into a Bar, because Ed is taking on some things outside his comfort zone. And let's see what that's all about.
You got it.
Dave, we got our old friend Ed Barath back tonight, one of our favorite retired rocket scientists and bass thumping groove daddy. Ed, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm actually doing real well.
Well, good. We're glad to have you back. And I tell you, I titled this episode "An Engineer and an Artist Walk into a Bar."
Yes, I saw that, and that was perfect.
Because Dave and I have had this conversation many, many times. We've never really taken it on air as a point of conversation to much extent. But you hit us up this week talking about your vignette you made and stepping outside your comfort zone a little bit and how that went down. But I tell you, before we get into that, though, you had an anecdote to share with us regarding one of our questions that was submitted to us a while back.
Yes, I did. You guys had a question, where is the weirdest place you ever found the model or something, something such like that?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, well, let me take you back. It's 1964 in New York City. I am about 12 years old. I walk past, beside my apartment complex is an empty lot. Across the street from the empty lot is a candy store, your typical sells models, ice cream, food, you know, the usual. Okay. I walk by once in a while, I walk by the empty lot and I see sprues, just model sprues sitting in the lot. And so I go pick them up and I take them home and I build them whatever I could find. They're basically just every once in a while. And the reason for this was at the time, you got to remember, this is like 1964. There were some places that said you could not buy glue unless you bought a model. So, obviously, I was juvenile delinquents at the time, would go to the candy store, buy the cheapest model they could find so they could get the glue. Go back to the empty lot, throw the model on the ground.
And huff.
And sniff the glue.
Well, I think that's probably the best one yet. That's interesting.
I am glad you chose the path of building the model and staying away from huffing the glue.
Well, I was 12 years old, and the funny thing was I didn't have to. They knew me at the candy store, so I didn't even have to buy a model to get the glue. and it's a good thing the juvenile delinquents never found that out. Yeah,
take more than your lunch money.
Yeah, I know. So that's and I've been kind of looking for those models ever since. I just remember they were bright orange or yellow, small, you know, small scale, like 72nd kind of stuff, seaplanes, what have you. I have no memory because there never was instructions. I never found the instructions in the lot. Oh, just wow. Some sprues. Anyway, that's my story.
Well, that's a good one, Ed. Thanks for sharing it.
Yeah, it's funny because the things that went on back then.
A lot of it still goes on today, maybe even worse.
I know. And I just also want to let you know I really enjoyed Dr. Strangebrush last time. Okay. I actually learned I got to go back and fix my tools. I really do. But he didn't mention one thing to show how crazy you could get. I've actually rescribed an old monogram, 826.
Yeah.
And then did natural metal finish.
Ooh.
And I'm never doing that again.
Ian on the bench is doing that exact same thing with the monogram B26 kit, taking off all of the raised panels. Yeah.
We should have a GoFundMe and buy him the damn ICM kit.
Well, he's doing it in 48 scale. And there's no.
That's what it is.
Oh, that's right. They just came out with it. Yeah.
So yes, there is no reason on earth to do that now. I'm sorry.
Other than you're halfway through it.
I could still start the ICM and beat him to the finish.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Ed, let's get into this topic here about what we were talking about earlier. Earlier in the week, what possessed you to go down the vignette route? I know the models I've seen of yours have all been kind of standalone static models.
Yes, but, you know, I've kind of grown to try to put some ground, you know, accessories and things like that. And I sort of been calling them dioramas without people. But then I realized I really want to get into doing a vignette. It's this whole experience has just been a large collaboration of just ideas and people. And I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to come on board and talk about it. One of the goals for me from retirement has been to be less engineer and more artist as a person, basically, because I think it's very healthy these days, not to get so wound up and to be more chill, more relaxed, what have you. It's healthy. That stress will kill you. And so this plays right into a goal of mine outside modeling. So that's the first thing that kind of came together. I want to do this as a person. And what happened was I'm a member of two clubs. I also want to talk about clubs. I part of the reason I wanted to get on is to tell people this would never have happened without model clubs. I am a member of two model clubs. One is in Pasadena, one is in Burbank. And I had help from both the clubs. This never would have gotten done without it. And first of all, let me just tell the audience what I'm talking about in terms of this vignette, in case you haven't seen it, and I'm sure you haven't seen it. Just picture picture on the grass a P-47 Thunderbolt. Okay, your nice World War II airplane. It's got a checkerboard cowl. Now, part of the checkerboard cowl is taken off so you can see the engine. And the cowl is lying on the ground, and two guys, service guys, are playing checkers. Okay, that's the vignette. Okay, so whenever I talk about stuff going this and that, at least you can keep that in your mind for what we're talking about. So someone at one of the clubs said, I've always had this idea, picture. And he told me about it. He said, look, I'm never going to get to do it. Told me about it. Just basically explained it just the way I explained it to you, that that's what it is. And I said, okay, fine. Sounds good. A couple of weeks later, he actually found the picture and sent it to me. And it turns out it isn't a picture. It's a caricature. It's a cartoon, basically, which I've tried to locate the author. I've posted it on I check Google Images. I get a lot of people who post it, but not who authored it. And so I got it, and it looks, oh, yeah, okay, they're playing chess, and it looks like they're wearing bomber jackets, so it looks like they might be pilots, not ground personnel. But the idea is the same. And I said, okay, great. So naturally, I go up to my stash, and dang, if I don't have that Tamiya 48 scale, you know, with the checkerboard cowl in the stash. And of course, I realize if I'm going to do this, I got to do it in 48. Okay. 1/72 is just too small. 1/32 is too big and too complicated. I'm sorry, David. It's got to be 1/48.
I'll grant you absolution on this one.
You know, I agree with you. If you say God is it's God's scale, then God must be really nearsighted, because you got to get real close to see in 72nd. So I sort of scope it out. And, you know, the first part of the artist comes through in that when you place it on the base, the plane can't be parallel or perpendicular to the base. Okay, it has to be at an angle. Right? Isn't that what? That's the first thing they teach us.
That's one of his first rules from that old "How to Do Dioramas" book.
That concept goes.
It goes into medieval times,
probably. Yeah.
The point is, it doesn't go into engineering times. It doesn't. It's not what I would do. It not makes me as comfortable. I would put it parallel to the base. Okay, that's more natural, but it isn't artistic. Okay, so I accept it, and I put it at the right angle, and I realize I want to have a line that goes between the two guys playing checkers. I said I wanted to make it more of a blue collar scene, so I changed it to checkers, and I changed it to ground personnel. And if you picture a straight line that you look between the two guys playing checkers, it's a straight line to the open engine.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, now that straight line can't be parallel or perpendicular to the bases, to the base either. So I set it up, and it makes sense. I go to my club in Burbank, and that's where we have some real artists with a capital A. And I talk to one of them, and I say, I'm planning to do this vignette, and I'm just that, and I show him the thing. And he's the one who tells me, you don't need the right wing. You need to cut the wing and the tail. You don't need it for the story. And then it really comes into play how this is all about the story, and the plane is not the subject. And that's new, and that's different. The plane is not the subject. Not to mention, the plane has got a wing cut off, for God's sake. You know, and that's no. I've seen them. I know we've all seen them with figures who do that kind of stuff. You know, for gun, what have you, and they're usually very sharp and small. But I wanted to try this, and that was all I could was comfortable cutting off was the wing and part of the tail. So he told me that was right. He also turned me on, because one of the things I'm not a big guy is for making bases. You know, putting that. Spreading that stuff over to make grass and what have you. I honestly, that's just not my like to spend the time. So he mentioned the company called Model Scene in the Czech Republic. And I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, but they make literally, they make 48 scale AstroTurf, you know, like one piece, 8x10 kind of thing. With, and you can get it from summer, you can get spring, you can get fall, and they have all this kind of stuff. And I just figured, oh, that's perfect. That I can just get that. So stuff is starting to come into place with help from both the clubs and thinking. So now, okay, so now I go back and reset it up with the cutoff wing, get the right base, and dang, if somebody in my Burbank club doesn't make bases as a side hobby. So I pick up the base. So now I have the base, and now I start working on the kit. And I realize that the Thunderbolts, it's not the subject, doesn't have to be all tricked out like I usually do, but I can't help it. Okay? So I have to put the aftermarket stuff in anyway. Basically, because I wanted to try some stuff. I heard about these HGW seat belts, which are fabric, and I wanted to try those. I also tried some Red Fox, you know, the 3D panels for the cockpit. And I'm sure you guys are familiar with that. I had to change the engine out for a quick boost engine because you're showing off the engine. And so I didn't have to, but I did it anyway. So I put together the Thunderbolt. The decals are to me and they're obviously invasion stripes. Fortunately, there are only invasion stripes on the bottom because they didn't go on very well. I learned a lesson about decals that I thought, you know, the old stall and set would work. It didn't really work that as well as I liked for Tamiya. The Mark fitter worked much better. So that's my tip for that. One of the things that keeps going in is understanding the difference to make it a vignette. And one of the things that really makes it different is the concept of symmetry versus asymmetry. The concept of symmetry, if you make airplanes, you have to understand symmetry. The real reason most planes get knocked out of competition is because they lack symmetry. The left side of the plane doesn't match the right. One of the wings is higher, one of the wheels is crooked, one of the ordnance is right. Something is wrong between the two sides. And that, to be honest, gets you knocked out first go around. You have to understand symmetry and you have to believe in it. And then you get past that, and now they're going to look at your model from weathering. And now symmetry is not your friend. Symmetry is bad because you can't weather the left side of the plane exactly the same as the right. It's not real.
Never really thought about it that way. But that's true.
And so you can't. So you're constantly fighting because you want to make it symmetrical, but you know you can't because it doesn't work for the artistry part of it. You have to put on your artistry hat and look at it from their perspective. That basically, in order to win a contest, it does have to have artistic elements. But in order to get there, you have to get the engineering elements correct.
And I can understand. I mean, that's where I think when I'm doing my own vignette or diorama, you know, and something beyond just a scenic base to give it some context, right? From the engineering world, a design and development standpoint, symmetry is your friend. I mean, because symmetry can make you have to do only half the work.
Right.
Or a quarter of the work, or even less sometimes. You get really lucky. And that's kind of ingrained in someone with that background, like myself and you, I'm sure as well.
Yeah.
That it's a hard thing to shake sometimes.
Yeah, it's good. It's balanced.
Like all your oil smudges are the exact same distance apart. Well, you mentioned weathering, and even, I would say, even the scenic elements too, as you can see that gravitation towards symmetry really screwing people over because you end up with I don't know, your modeling spots are all the same size and the same distance apart, or all your tufts of grass are almost the same distance from each other, and it just never looks natural.
Mike, that's I think a place where you don't think about it, but it really does come into play as in a base, or particularly a base that that represents groundwork. Trying to do something random is hard.
Right.
Look at how many of the bases you see when you look at either vignettes or dioramas, or even like simple armor bases for armor pieces, where the person has managed to like make a mirror of, you know, one side to the other side. So everything looks organized rather than what occurs in nature, which is chaos and randomness.
Right. And I agree, it's very hard. And the other thing that, that comes to me is, if you look at it from the story, if the left matches the right, what new information is there to the story? It's not adding anything new to the story, but it's hard as hell to fight it. And one of the ways, you know, because it's on my mind. Remember, I was going back to that straight line. You see a straight line between the two guys, points right to the engine. And then I put a barrel, you know, an oil drum there, basically to tell you this is where you're supposed to look. And I put a fire extinguisher on top of the barrel. And damn it, if I had to fight putting the fire extinguisher in the middle of the barrel. You know, I had to fight.
That's a really good point. I mean, how many times have you seen a base where there are boxes stacked and they are stacked very neatly? And yet if you go and look at any photograph of any type of scene, in real life, that rarely occurs.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you might get an OCD supply sergeant who insists on that. But in general, that's not what happens in real life. I mean, you could look around my model room and see there is no symmetry anywhere.
And to me, that's one of the biggest things between an engineer and an artist, that you, because you have to work both ends. You really do. And I've seen the opposite end of it too, where people who have had really nice weathering, really artistic side, but they didn't concentrate enough on the technical side. You know, stuff is just, they didn't concentrate, and it looks it.
Well, I've got a theory with this, and Mike and I have talked about this on a number of occasions. I can generally walk down a table of models and look at them and tell you what the modeler really likes to do. Whether he likes weathering, whether he likes groundwork, whether he likes assembly, whether he loves painting and decals. You can walking down a table full of models, you can see the modeler's strengths and weaknesses in most of the kits that you look at.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised, because, yeah, you can't. That's who the person is.
Exactly.
That's who the person is. And obviously what I'm trying to tell your audience, to be honest, is you have to know what kind of person you are. And if you need to expand, then you need to expand who you are.
Well, that brings me to a couple of questions for you. How did you find for yourself swapping those hats on and off?
I enjoy it. I enjoyed it immensely. It was eye-opening, and it was a lot of fun. And it was something that basically has helped me as a person, to make me healthier, because it's shown me different ways to look at things and what have you. And it's just, I also had a great time because I interacted with people in the clubs. You know, all in all, it was a great experience. And I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to come on, that and I wanted to give a pitch to people that, hey, now that, you know, COVID is coming down and people are getting out, join a club. Honestly.
Well, we beat that drum all the time.
I know. And I'm saying I'll play show for a couple of minutes and just say, yeah, join a club. I couldn't have done this without the club's help. And especially if you've been sitting home in your garage building models for 2 years, join a freaking club and show people. You know, what could be better?
Well, one of the things that Mike and I talk about, you know, modeling we all think of as a solitary hobby, and it is for many people. But when we talk about going to contests and encouraging people to go to contests, there is a social side to this hobby that if you'll get out there and do it, if you'll get out there and extend yourself and go to a model contest, that it will increase your enjoyment of the hobby manyfold, simply because it turns out the best part of the hobby is not actually building the kits and painting the kits, although that's all fun too for us. It's the interacting with other guys who like to do the exact same thing.
It's healthy for you as a person.
Yes, that is true.
You know what I mean? And my wife tells me, she's a clinical psychologist, get out there, hang with people. It's good for you. And she's right. I mean, it is. And that, to be honest, I know you guys make that point. Now, yes, I'm acting a little PSA here, but
that's fine.
I would encourage it. It really, especially now that coming out, go find a club. And if not, start a club. You know, all it is, you don't have to, you know, just get a couple of friends, hang out, you know, drink. You've got plenty of recommendations from you people on what to drink, you know. Have some, you know, it's just healthy for you as a person, not to mention how much it makes you a better modeler.
Well, and that is one of the things where the decline of the brick and mortar hobby shop really, I do think, has had a negative effect on the hobby, because a lot of places where the club formed was guys in the hobby shop seeing other guys in the hobby shop, and you start a conversation in the aisle, and then the next thing you know, the hobby shop owner, out of self-interest as well as out of the love of the hobby, you know, puts people in touch with each other, and the next thing you know, a club forms.
Absolutely. And I am blessed, and I use the term really, that we have two local hobby stores that we can go to. And I might as well give them a shout out, because I do hang out there occasionally. One is Smith Brothers in Northridge, and the other one is Burbank House of Hobbies, which you might see them online. They are the hobby store that, you know, weeks ago you talked about you got to turn sideways to go through the aisles. This, you have to turn sideways to go through the aisles. And we are very blessed to have two of them that I can go to. And I agree with you. You got to support them. Even, you know, it's just too easy to go to get it from online.
Sure.
You really got to support. That's my other PSA announcement.
Well, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, and it gets back to a conversation Dave and I have had quite frequently, especially for those more artistically inclined modelers or figure painters or whatever. And with you being a musician as well, maybe you can relate to this on two fronts. But I think getting out there and trying new things and doing stuff and modeling often and you know, trying to learn some of these basic tenets of artistic presentation, like you've discussed, can get a lot of people about 80 to 90% of the way there. When I say there, I mean in comparison to some of these really phenomenal people that they're jaw dropping modelers, right?
Right.
Dave and I would both contend, I think, that to get to a certain level, not everybody can do it.
Right.
I think you know, not everybody's going to be a Grammy Award winning musician.
No matter how
hard they practice.
No, I agree. I agree. And the old saw that I was taught was genius does what it must, talent does what it can. And that's how I think of it very much. You know, talent, and I would say I have talent, but I don't have genius. It's a whole different mindset. It's a whole different life balance, you know, and there is something that counts in all areas, obviously in music and in modeling. There are people who are phenomenal who has just an imagination that I don't have.
Well, and the analogy I usually fall back to is I could go out and practice basketball every minute, every waking minute of every day of my life. And I could get pretty good. I might get real amateur good. But I'm 5'8" with less than stellar coordination. No matter how much I practice, I'm never going to get to NBA basketball player level talent, because those people, in addition to putting in all that practice, they all have certain innate gifts, height, coordination, eyesight, speed, whatever, that I don't have and can't acquire. Right. I think the same thing is true in regard to artistic skill with modelers. There are some modelers that have a good eye, have a natural, innate, they didn't learn it, they were born with it, skill with color and eye, all of that stuff. So while we can all practice to get better and build and hope and improve and do that, there's some level that the mere mortal modeler isn't going to get past simply because they don't have those other, for want of a better word, God-given talents.
True, but on the other hand, I would never, when you say even if you practice this and that and everything, but the point is you, being you, would never take that path because it's so out of balance with your life.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I think so that goes also. The people who do that have a different life balance. In other words, it is even the fact that if I studied, you know, every minute did that and everything. The point is, I would never do that. I would never spend that much time. It would wreck my whole life balance. That's what I'm saying. Genius does what it must. They have a different life balance. And so it is fair. It is okay for them to spend every waking moment doing something. You know, that seems to be, that's okay with them. It isn't okay with me to do that. Even if I could, you know, even if I thought it would help.
Yeah. It's too much and goes against your grain.
It just goes against the life balance. You know, I mean, I knew this at JPL. Obviously, there were people who were project managers who knew, you know, if you're a project manager for a NASA thing, you have no home life. I mean, you are working 80 hours a week for a year. Okay. You have to be willing to make that commitment, to make that change in life balance. And some people can make it and some people can't. True. And some people don't want to. That's what I'm saying. It isn't even a matter of a can't. It's a matter of I don't want to.
Yep, I can relate to that. That's why I'm in my current position, because it gave me the type of work I wanted, and not where a traditional corporate engineering path might take you. You climb the ladder and you end up managing people, then people and money, and then money. And I didn't go to engineering school to do that stuff.
No, I understand. And that's what I'm saying. So it's I think more complicated than just basic. Say, you know, God gave him skills. You know, I think God gave other people intelligence to say, "Shit, I'm not doing that."
I'm sorry, you
can beat that out. I didn't mean it. You know, I don't care who they. I'm not. You know what I mean? I look at some stuff of people. Said, look what people are doing for a million followers and stuff like that. And I'm saying, I don't even care if I got a million. There's no way I'm doing that.
Where you're kind of at the front end because you just started this path down this vignette and you completed your. I assume that's your first one. Yes,
and I did want to talk about doing the figures. Obviously, I couldn't leave out the figures because obviously I did the plane first. Everything was all set. Then I got the figures and I went online, and it wasn't that easy to find because I was looking for, you know, World War II figures, but they had to be on one knee or both knees. You know, they couldn't be, they weren't standing up. And I found one on Verlinden and one on ICM. And that's where I also spoke to my club in Burbank, because one of the artists there, he had done some demos on Painting Flesh and what have you. And I couldn't do it without calling him. And he gave me a secret recipe for flesh, you know, and we discussed, he told me how to do it and set it up, how to paint this people first and do this and that. And then, you know, all the artistry stuff kicks in too. You got to paint them different. You can't paint the guy's face the same. They're not the same face as the two people. Their clothes have to be different. But he got me into a technique that I hadn't really used, and that is of a mix. You know, he said, you know, the overalls. I was just going to paint them like a field green and stuff like that. I usually, in airplanes, I don't make mixtures for paint, to be honest. You know, I'll get the olive drab, Gunsy Sanyo olive drab or something like that. And maybe you'll lighten it up and what have you. But I don't mix my own olive drab, that kind of stuff. And the artist people tend to mix their own colors. You know, I think it goes back to the fact that they like finger painting when we were kids. And engineers don't. Engineers don't like to make a mess. And artist people do. They enjoy mixing and having palettes and stuff of paint all over the place. And engineers don't. So I was never big, but he got me into doing mixtures for the overalls. So then one would be different than the other. They can't be the same color, their overalls. And it got me into how to do that and how to look at it and to look at it from the hands and the this and light. But he gave me a lot of techniques to help to make it. And obviously, to be honest, the saving grace is that it's 48th. You know what I mean? We're not talking huge figures here.
Right.
You know, so I can hide a little behind the height. But I did have a couple of good ideas, and let me talk about my good ideas. One of the ideas I had was, if I'm going to show people playing checkers, I need to show the checkers box. I need to make a checkers box. That would make a nice accessory. So I go online, and I check World War II era checker boxes. And dang, if it doesn't come up in eBay, that evidently Coca-Cola sent the forward bases in World War II a game box with checkers, chess, dice, cards, cribbage, you know, all that kind of stuff. And there's a beautiful picture of a checkers box. And it's in color, and it says Dragon Checkers on it. And so I say, and it's red. The box is red. So I say, oh, this is fantastic. So I copy it. I make the box. I print out the Dragon Checkers. And I put it down, and dang it, I put it so it's parallel to the base. So you can read it. You can read in 48 scale, it says Dragon Checkers. And it also lined me up to another good idea, was to introduce another color, which was red. You know, rather than just have the black and white, I've always liked the colors of red, white, and black. You know, I think, except for Nazi flags. That's the only reason. Not those. But other than that, I think they go together well. And the vignette needed red. And so besides the checkers box, that's where I got the fire extinguisher from. And I put the fire extinguisher right next to the engine, off center. And I also had to make sure my accessories was an odd amount. I couldn't have, you know, you can't have even. Even is comforting and relaxing. Odd is tension and drama. You know, so you got to have an odd number of things, so they tell me. And so that was fun in setting that up. And I really got to say, I got to put my artist hat on after I took care of the engineering.
Well, you think you're going to do another one?
Oh, yeah. I think so. But the idea is it has to come up with an idea. You know, it's always harder, you know, for planes. You know, planes never seem to do as well in dioramas and vignettes, for the most part, compared to army tanks and what have you. It's harder to get a good idea that really shows it off.
Well, I recommend that you look at the work of a modeler by the name of Steve Husted, because Steve, who works from photographs,
yeah,
does unbelievable, amazing aircraft dioramas that are as captivating and intriguing as any armor diorama ever would be. And the you know how you got your inspiration from the cartoon?
Yeah.
He gets all of his inspiration from actual photographs, and he builds to the photograph, which to me, the interesting thing about that is you're getting the photographer's artistic eye when the a person takes a photograph. You're getting that photographer's existing artistic talent converted into three dimensions, and it's they're just amazing.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up, you know, and because I do think if there is something that also separates genius from talent, it's the inspiration. You know, it's the real stuff is the people comes out of people's minds. That's the stuff that does blow me away, that somebody thought of doing this. And obviously it's a lot more, it's a lot easier with sci-fi, and you'll see that we're just insane things out of nothing. But yeah, I'll have to check them out. I'm working on the Airfix 48th Bristol Blenheim.
It's a good kit.
It's a good kit. That's why I got it. And it's from Greece, 1941. So if I'm going to have a vignette, it's interesting to me because I've never visited that part of the war,
yeah.
Greece in 1941. And I also have a Bedford truck from Airfix I can throw in, and maybe if I'll have to look up to get maybe a picture of what the airfields look like in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
I can
recommend some books for you.
Can you just text, you know, email?
I will be happy to shoot you a DM after we're done recording, because I can recommend one of the best books you'll ever read on that subject.
Yeah, because that's what's interesting about it, that it just happens to fall in. I've always liked, first of all, I like the British Mediterranean schemes. That Middlestone is fantastic. That Middlestone just loves raw umber, you know, for a wash. It's just, yep. They're made for each other. And so I like that scheme. I've always liked multi-engine, 48th multi-engine, because everybody seems to do single engine. So it was kind of just to step out a bit and do 48th multi-engine. It's never as much as single engine.
Well, Ed, at a high level, what'd you learn from all this, and what's going to keep you moving forward down this kind of path to?
Well, like I said, what I learned was I learned to appreciate the help of the clubs. I really learned that to go out and ask, you know, I want to do this. Help me, people. You're supposed to be good at this. Help me. You work in the entertainment business. You get paid to do this. Help me. You know. I'm just an engineer. Help me. You know, I learned that it may be better. Literally, you know, it's not often, you know, how stuff you learn in modeling, some of the stuff you learn in modeling can actually help you be a better person.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And that, if there's a lesson, and especially that's what, you know, hoping spouses hear this, the lesson is modeling is helping me be a better person besides being a better modeler. And I think that's the story. And I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to come on, because it's not often you could say that.
No, you can't. Well, one other thing I would like to ask you about all this is I've said it before, and Dave said it to me, that perfection is the enemy of the good. So, you know, we've talked about these really high level artistic type modelers, and, you know, we want to fall into this trap of comparing ourselves sometime, but that's not a good place to go. What do you do to be satisfied, keep the self-encouragement up to go forward? I can't imagine you let a lot of this get to you too much.
Remember when I spoke about the system engineering, that's what I do. I check that the model has no flaws at the distance most people are going to see it.
Right.
And when I get to that point, I stop. If you can't, you know, I've got my nerd glasses, as my wife calls them, optivizers.
Yep.
And when I look and if I have to be, you know, an inch with the optivisor to see a flaw, I say, all right, if that's when the flaw is, then I quit. You know what I mean? I'm very aware to try not to spend time polishing the cannonball.
I like that, Ed.
if I can. You know, I mean, I'm aware of it, and it's hard. Obviously, it's harder than it looks, and I say this, but I always do it more. But, you know, as an engineer, your job is to do the requirements. You don't have to go past the requirements. You know what I mean? You're given a set of conditions. You know, you have to build this, and it has to do this. It has to, you know, speed, whatever it has to do. It doesn't have to do more. And it costs time and money to do more. Yep. And so the truth is, don't do more. You know what I mean? Satisfy the requirements, then quit.
Well, and it's that thing with any project. The last 10% of performance costs 90% of the cost of the entire project.
And yeah, that's, you know, that's what they teach you in engineering.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They teach you the budget doesn't go up forever. You know what I mean? We got to launch in 2 years. You know what I mean? The sun won't wait. That kind of stuff. Yep. You gotta do the best you can and move on.
Well, I always learn, Ed, to the engineer, the glass is neither half full nor half empty. It's twice as big as it needs to be.
Yes. And it needs a shot of alcohol.
Dave, you got anything else for Ed?
Nope, that's it. I always enjoy our talks.
And yeah, I just had to say, I think it's just a good story. And what if I can just share for me for a moment.
Sure.
The kids finally got on my case. You know, the both of them work in digital media here in LA. And they said, we got to get you a website, Dad. So they got me a website, and I'll put this up and other stuff. And I think I haven't seen it yet, but I just, the honor of having a domain that's eddiebmodels.com that I will start to post, and I'll post this and post some articles and post the picture and what have you. Because my wife was also complaining, why do you keep, you know, you post this out on Facebook and you subject all your friends to this, you know, whether they're modelers or not, you know, and they have to come back and, yeah, it looks real good, you know. So this way I can just take them all off and just put them on the website and leave my friends alone.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, it was an absolute pleasure and a goal I've looked to for a long time.
Well, good. Can't wait to hear about your next one.
All right, Ed. Thanks again. And thank you for the music as well. That was a lot of fun for us.
It was fun for me, too. Anytime.
All right. Well, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
You know, Dave, I'm glad we put that little ticket down to Ed's model back in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I am telling you what, it is. It's one. There's so much that since we've started doing this podcast, there's been so many cool things that have happened just as serendipity. And one of them was your idea to print up those cards and put them down in Las Vegas at a couple of models and get us to interact with some really, really interesting and cool modelers. And Ed is the classic example of that. So we're about the end of the episode, Mike. I'm assuming that Russell Reserve has not suddenly turned into a bad bourbon.
You know, folks, I tell you, if you're looking for one that's good, really good for the price. If you got a big box liquor store in your town, you're going to go there, and if they got Russell's Reserve, it's going to be like less than $35.
Yep.
And it is a 10-year aged bourbon.
Now, you don't find 10-year for $35.
Well, you know, even the bullet 10-year's, like, gosh, it's 40 something.
Yeah.
And yep. That's not expensive either.
No, it isn't. And both of them are good, but
this one's a bargain, and it's really good. It's a little to the sweet side, but not too much. It's not too hot. It's really good. I'm telling you, I highly recommend this one. If you're looking for one, you know, we tell people to start off with the Basil Hayden's because it's like 80 proof and it's got a lot of good notes, but it's not too hot. It's not going to puts you under the table very fast. This one, this would be the next step, I think. This one is would be a good one to if you started with the basil to come up this Russell's Reserve 10-year, and I think you're going to like it.
You know, we're going to have to put together a bourbon flight, a recommended bourbon flight for listeners who can go out and get the as small as they can find of the different bourbons that we would recommend on a flight of like 5 or 7. We have to do that. That'd be a good idea.
Well, how's that beer working out for you?
Well, Mad Tree Psychopathy, India Pale Ale, very drinkable. You know, I said there's hop at the end of the first swallow. It hits the back of the throat. Now, I don't know if it's just continuing to drink it, but that end note that was a little bit bitter, the first taste or second taste through, has disappeared. It's drinkable. It wouldn't necessarily be my first choice, but if you and I are hanging around the pool in July and you handed me one of these, I would not turn it down. It's good beer, you know, made in Cincinnati, so it's close by. 6.9% alcohol, so it's got a little kick to it, but it's not, you know, it's not one of these 9% Voodoo Ranger Imperials where, you know, that can really hit you hard. This is very drinkable, and yeah, I'd drink it again. So, Mike, this is where we usually do shout-outs of the month. Do you have a shout-out?
Dave, my shout-out this episode is for all the folks up in Canada, be it Hamilton or London, Ontario, our friends up in Ottawa. The red carpet's already getting rolled out, man.
Yes. Hey, Canadian politeness is really, really a thing. We have been... The amount of encouragement and welcome that we have felt from our Canadian brothers is really something to behold.
Well, so I want to shout out all those guys, and you know who you are. We got our Build Night guys, and we got the guys from Scale Model Podcast, the guys from the Hamilton Club, and we got a lot of other friends up in the Ottawa area who are going to be coming down to that show. We just look forward to meeting everybody and hanging with everybody, and we really appreciate the hospitality, and if this is what we're going to get at the front end, we can't wait to see how it goes down once we get there. So thanks a lot. We'll be there soon.
Yep. And if you're listening to this on Saturday, we're on our way. I would echo that in, you know, the only thing I'm already regretting is that we don't have another day with them. This trip is going to be a pretty quick trip, and I wish we had just one more day to spend time with them. Now, instead of doing shout-outs, I've got two listener requests, things I'm going to try and tap the hive mind of the PMM listener base to see if you all can help me. Number one, I want to know if anybody makes the Hawaiian Airlines decals for the DC-3 at the time of Pearl Harbor. I'll post on the dojo a photograph of what these markings look like. And I want to know if anybody does them in 72nd scale, because this is one of the items that I'm thinking about doing coming up. And so I thought I would tap the hive mind and see if anybody out there knew if these decals were already done in 72nd scale. If not, I may have to use the cameo, and this may be my first project in the cameo. So we'll see. You got another shout out, Mike?
I do not, Dave.
Well, I've got one more hive mind request.
Well, lay it on us.
Everybody has seen, I hope by now, in the dojo, Mike had a photograph from World War II of a Russian kilometer marker that is really cool. And Mike took that marker or took that photograph and dimensioned it out and did a 3D print of those, and they're available. You can get them if you want them. And what I'm looking for is in World War II Norway in 1940, when the Germans invaded, did the Norwegian government, were the roads in Norway, were there standardized kilometer posts, not made out of wood, like a wooden sign or anything, but again, something that was like a concrete or cast kilometer marker? If so, I would like a photograph. If any of our listeners in Norway, and we have a few, hear this, if there is such a thing, can you send me a photograph or preferably multiple photographs of them so that I know what they look like? Because if I can locate such an item, I'm going to try and impose on Mike to see if he can do a 3D print of the item.
Well, I might be up for that.
Good.
Well, Dave, we are getting to the end of this episode.
Yes, we are. And while you're listening to this, we're on our way to Canada or close to it.
All right, Dave. Well, as we always say,
so many kids,
so little time, Dave. Take it easy, man.
See you on the road, man.
All right.